So we're rolling?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Greetings, everybody. Welcome to 2018 and our first historic preservation meeting for Clark County. We'll begin with roll call and introductions, beginning on my left here.
Alex Gall.
Robert Hines.
Sarah Fox.
Sean Denniston.
keep going.
Jamie,
we could
go ahead and introduce yourself.
Jamie Herblin.
Brad Richardson.
Keith Jones.
John Weicker.
Sharon Lou Montoya.
Jackie Camp. Lisa back there.
Good.
Oh, yes, Lisa Vantech. Thank you.
Welcome, everybody. Okay, first item on the agenda is the meeting notes from December. And we have four commissioners here at this time, so I think we can probably, all of whom were present, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yep, so we can go ahead and look at those. I give everybody an opportunity to look at the minutes from the December meeting, and I'll entertain a motion to approve or any other questions that you may have.
I didn't see any corrections, so I move to approve.
I second it. I looked at it earlier.
All in favor of approving the minutes from the December 2017 HPC meeting?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All right. Meeting, the minutes are approved. Okay. Back to the future. Okay. We've got old business and updates, but we've also got some new business, and I think that we're going to move that forward in the agenda. So Jamie Herblin with the Evergreen Hotel. Did I pronounce your name right?
That's perfect, yes.
Okay. Welcome. You're with the Evergreen Hotel, and my understanding is that you were here about 5 years ago, right?
Correct.
In 2013, right before Sarah and I joined the commission. And you're inquiring about some window replacements because you had some window failures and
yes.
Concerns. So, is there kind of a background on this that you want to read,
or
do
we
just
read.
Turn it over to our guest?
Yeah. Well, I just wanted to. We made some handouts, so we've got it. It's kind of reversed. So, we wanted to give you the memo from 2013 as what was the review process at that point, and then Jamie provided kind of an update on what her needs are. As you probably saw, I pointed you to the notes from those meetings. We were kind of in this loop for a few months. So the idea is kind of to get before that, when she's ready to come officially for her heritage review overlay review, to now make sure what the commission wants to see in addition to what's already required, just for sort of an adequate review. So she's looking for some feedback on that. But I'll let her go ahead and kind of talk about what you're thinking about doing and some of your challenges and concerns.
Yeah, so 5 years ago when I was here talking with the group, there was a lot of adamancy that the windows had to be a wood replacement. I financially, it's not something that my company can afford. We are in assisted living. We are 98% Medicaid. I don't have enough money in the budget to be able to replace the windows as they need to be. Where I sent some photos currently that were some issues that we are dealing with. We've got dry rot happening. I've got water kind of leaking into the building, which is, you know, rotting out the inside of the drywall, having some mold issues. And these are obviously things that we want to get taken care of to maintain the building and have a happy living environment for our residents that live there. So I wanted to talk with you guys tonight just to see if there's any kind of compromise that we can kind of come up with. I want to make it work on both sides. And so I've looked at some different options. Things are still quite expensive. I've met with Pella. I've got a bid from Pella. We're still looking at about $1,100 for a window. I've got 155 windows of like resident room windows. That doesn't include like my first floor living or dining room areas, living rooms. So I just need to get some feedback and see, you know, there's a lot of legwork that has to be done, and I don't want to be chasing a bunch of different ways if it's not something that is going to be acceptable to you guys. So,
was the $1,100 for the wood replacements, or was that for the vinyl replacement?
So,
I remember seeing that 5 years ago it was about $1,000 for the wood replacements.
So, and the repair is also running about $1,000 if I have them each repaired.
Yeah.
So that I did look at that a year ago, and just to talk about repairing, it's very hard to find somebody that can do repairs, and then if they can do the repair, it is it's a long, drawn out and terrible process. It's taken us months to have windows repaired in the meantime. So. So my big, the wood exterior is actually, it's 712. That doesn't include an install, that's a window itself. That's what these numbers are. And then they have the clad exterior, that's 941. And then there's the shade, what makes it a little bit more expensive if you put the shade, and it makes it a double hung, which makes it so that we can have clean windows. So that is it's $1,081.04. So.
And how much were the vinyl windows?
Vinyl
about
windows.
About 500.
Coming out at about half. I didn't get current updated rates, but I can tell you I just bought a whole bunch of new windows for a garage with a mother-in-law unit, and they're a couple hundred dollars a piece. So we'd be looking at, you know, quite a difference.
So the wood window requirement for you is about 300% higher in terms of budget for you to procure those and install them.
Right. Yeah, and that, again, it doesn't include the install, which we have to have on top of.
Right.
So, you know, if we did a vinyl, we could do it in a forest green where it would blend with the paint exterior that we have, I think, quite nicely, so it's not going to stick out. It's not going to be ugly.
Yeah, it talks about the fenestration here. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, and I think
is the bottom floor like all? Is it all apartments, or is there a difference between the levels and the use of the?
Yeah. So the first floor. I don't know if they have.
The windows looked a lot different, so that's why I was wondering.
Yeah, so the windows are going to be different on the first floor than if we get upstairs. Let me just look and see.
So
if you look at this photo, which you may have from the 2013 memo, I think.
Yeah.
Jackie, did you take it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a photo in there. Here, I can just pass this to you.
We've got it.
Okay. So this is our first floor. This is our dining room. So this is the south end of our building. Mm-hmm. So this faces Fifth Street. So this is the first floor. These are our dining room windows here. So those would be, I mean, that's going to be a much, you know, probably more expensive window than just the resident windows.
Are those failing at the same rate as those upper windows?
No. Not as much. No, the ones, and those are more of a metal window.
So they've likely been replaced already.
Probably
once.
Were replaced in 87 or something. But the wood windows are the ones on the second floor, third, fourth, fifth, that are failing.
Have you looked into any sort of special valuation or? I mean, the building is on the National Register, so, mm-hmm. you know, it should qualify for some kind of grant, maybe? I don't know. I mean, of course, that takes a grant writer and, this and that. But,
or at least...
But I would think maybe, Sean, you tax credits or some sort of assistance that might be in the offing for something.
Yeah, and I haven't recently, when we met 5 years ago, there wasn't anything that was available to my recollection.
I think we talked about it, because there's a couple different programs, right? And I think I think in our notes we talked about current use and whether or not you could go for the current use, which lowers the amount you pay on your property taxes for the land value. Okay. Which are at least kind of just some things that you could possibly take advantage of as being on the register. The second one is special valuation, and that's if you do a substantial renovation to the building, you can get a decrease amount that you pay on the building side of the valuation. So for 10 years, they'll decrease the amount you paid that the commission approves. They deduct that from the reassessed value after the renovations, and then you don't have to pay the taxes on those repairs for 10 years. So it's a kind of an incentive to do some repairs without having to pay for the cost of the reassessment.
So it just defers the taxes for 10 years?
It doesn't defer it. In a way it does. You're not having to pay it later, but yes, it will be reassessed after 10 years at what it is at market that year. So there's that. There's also, I think it might apply the federal tax credit, because I know it has to be National Register and it has to be income producing. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I think it meets that test. So that's another incentive that you could possibly be eligible for. That could be.
Is that something that you can only do once? Because I think our owners did that when they bought the building in 87. So
that's a good question. I'll help you look into that, okay?
Okay.
So my thoughts when I was reading this and I was looking back on the minutes from the 2013 meetings is that I'm not sure that wood versus vinyl was really a showstopper. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, this is a case of rehabilitation, right? It's a building that's already been repurposed, mm-hmm. right? So you're basically maintaining it for the existing purpose, right? That's
right.
Continued the economic viability of this particular resource.
Mm-hmm.
And within that capacity, as basically it's a healthcare center or
correct.
A convalescent center, mm-hmm. is the good way to describe it, it needs to maintain a certain sanitation. There were citations from the state health department on resulting from those windows. So I think in terms of, you know, its existing use, the fact that it's already been repurposed, that this is a relatively minor preservation, as John had said back in 2013, you know, the change would not alter the look of the exterior, as the fenestration patterns would be retained. I mean, if we're talking about 3-4x on budget, I don't think wood versus vinyl is a showstopper. That's my personal opinion. I mean, as purists, I think we all try to,
right.
you know, want to keep everything as original as possible, but sometimes that's just not realistic.
I was kind of thinking to myself that that the second and third levels and everything above the first floor you wouldn't necessarily notice if it was wood. Maybe the purists would, but that to me seemed like if we're looking for compromises in a path forward, that one seems easy to me. And the other thing I was thinking too was if there was a way to store those windows when you took them out, so that there could be the possibility of someone maybe rehabilitating them someday. You know, if you guys have like a basement storage or something.
Storage is pretty tight in the building.
This was just me brainstorming, thinking, well, if it's, you know, obviously seeing that the rot, you know, all the rot and the mold, that's not a way to live. So getting that taken care of, especially on levels that people can't, if they're walking along the street, they're not going to notice.
Right.
So I was thinking, well, later, if there's money, someone else purchases the building, there's still that asset maybe in your basement. They
mm-hmm.
can fix those windows because they weren't broken. The glass didn't look broken in any of them or anything. So
nope.
That was my thought. And then maybe if there is money to be saved in this project, to put it into the first floor, you know. But if you said that they're not even wood, but that was my thinking. I was like,
right,
maybe put it forth where people would actually see and appreciate the building from the street level.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody else?
So when I look at the pictures of deterioration, they are all the double hung upper windows. Is the main floor deteriorating the same way? The first floor, these larger commercial style windows?
They're not deteriorating. My main concern is the ones up on second, third, fourth, and fifth floors.
Okay.
So first floor, we're doing pretty good. Again, I think, just thinking because I haven't looked at them recently, like I know in my office, there's the separation between the two windows is a metal part. It is not a wood piece.
Mm-hmm.
So the first floor is holding out, you know, pretty good. I think the benefit of replacing the first floor windows and stuff eventually would be, you know, you're not going to get the insulation, or you would get the insulation with replacement, whereas now it's kind of chilly when you sit next to a window.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of a great need, it would be second, third, fourth, and fifth floors in resident rooms.
So there are a few issues. One is that a vinyl window isn't going to give you the same look. Vinyl windows require a wider frame than these wood windows do, so there is going to be a change in the look if you move to a vinyl. Another issue is if you can't afford wood, then you can't afford vinyl. Those wood windows are 100 years old. The vinyl windows will give you 5 to 15. If you look at their warranties, there's a reason that they're as short as they are. It's because vinyl windows are, the glass and the frames have very different material properties, and they pop the gasket. And so you're going to be facing moisture and thermal comfort issues all over again. In 5 to 15 years, if you're really lucky, you know, maybe 20. And so you'll be looking at the same expense again. And so that brings up the cost. You know, you will replace vinyl windows so many times in the lifespan of a better window that you'll actually pay more for vinyl windows over the long run, mm-hmm. even though you have a lower upfront cost. There are alternatives, though. I understand the issue with wood windows and replacing them, especially with a modern wood window. You know, there are clad metal windows that are an alternative that will give you a more similar look and is a higher quality window. There is fiberglass frame windows, which are actually worked like wood and can give you a very similar look to wood windows. And there are, make sure I remember the name right, cellular core vinyl windows, which are they're constructed differently than the standard vinyl window that you get, you know, from most contractors. Vinyl windows, usually it's a hollow frame,
mm-hmm.
but they can make vinyl so that it's like it's bubbly and it's solid, and that's a much more stable product than the standard vinyl window. So that's another alternative that will at least be better. It'll give a longer life, and you have a better chance of getting a look that matches the window. One of the other big things is you replace these windows, you lose the glass. And the glass is a pretty defining characteristic of these windows. It's not just the wood frame, it's that wave to the glass that you can even see in the picture here. It's not as pronounced as, you know, older glass windows,
mm-hmm.
But there's just that little bit of a wave because the glass is made differently than we make glass now. And so that would be a definite loss, and it's kind of an argument in favor of rehabilitation, if it's possible.
That's why I'm suggesting not getting rid of the windows.
Yeah.
Well, what about, can you put the panes or the, you know, the glass into new frames? No.
I mean, if you had someone mill new wood frames or hand mill from solid fiberglass stock, I mean, yeah.
Then you're looking at 2,000.
Right.
You know,
glad we can help.
We're kind of constrained by craftsmanship here because these windows are not in great shape, but I doubt they're all in as bad a shape as some of the worst pictures that you've shown. I bet some of them are a little bit better, some of them a little bit worse. Mm-hmm. Maybe some are even worse than what you've shown us here. It shouldn't cost that much to rehabilitate the windows, but it might here, just because there aren't people who know how to do it.
Yeah, and that's...
And that's an unfortunate reality that we're facing here. So I think that I would be, you know, reality is reality. So if there's if there's a way that, you know, maybe the frontage windows, you know, the ones that face the main thoroughfare, are the ones that could be rehabilitated, mm-hmm. and it's the higher windows and the less frontage windows that get a replacement because it's necessary. You know, and that builds on Sarah's idea, which is, I think, spot on, that kind of the stuff that people are closer to, you go more authentic with. The stuff that's farther away, where people, you know, becomes harder to tell the difference. Even on the glass, on those upper floors, it's gonna be harder to tell the difference. And I think that evaluating ideas like that, but also, I think especially evaluating kind of the non-standard, it's a real shame that the window industry pushes vinyl windows so hard, because they're a really terrible product. I work in energy efficiency, and so we know that, you know, these windows, if you took these wood windows, rehabilitated them, and put a storm window on them, they would probably perform better than those new vinyl windows, because just that's the way that it is.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think vinyl is, it's a bad option from preservation, it's a bad option from energy efficiency, and you know, overall I think it's a fairly bad option, but you have a budget that you have to work with. I think if you come here with an application for a certificate of appropriateness, I think really showing that, you know, here's our bid for getting the windows rehabilitated, here's a bid from a couple of different contractors to replace them with, you know, different options, mm-hmm. especially some of these options that would fit in better. Now, those are the things that would convince me that, oh, you know, this is the best we can do, because maybe it is the best we can do.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we would really need to see that information,
okay.
to be able to say, I agree, that is the best that you can do. That's a shame, and hopefully you can put it in storage, but you've convinced us. But I'll be honest, if I see a window replacement thing, the certificate of appropriateness application come through, I'm gonna need to be convinced that going with vinyl or even fiberglass, you know, is the way that it has to be done.
Well, just to be fair, you're one vote, so.
That's another point. I'm one vote. I could get outvoted.
Well, one vote, and they don't need our approval, do they?
It's not a certificate of appropriateness.
Oh, it's not a certificate.
Recommendation.
Oh, it's not the local register, it's just the national register?
That sounds odd, doesn't it?
It's just the national.
But well, if there's a budget concern, I think there's a valid human health concern.
Mm-hmm.
There's the residents who are in this area that I think it's valuable to the community to have them there.
Mm-hmm.
I think this really contributes to the downtown culture and heritage. So all those things need to be taken into consideration.
And I think it's really wonderful that you have come to us, because you're already, you know, you're asking for help, and Jackie's, you know, thinking of ideas. So I mean, hopefully you come away with some good ideas, and you know, maybe more funding will come along.
More options, and I mean, anyway,
they might present themselves, and
we can help. And you should check to see if the owners already did the historic tax credit, because if they're still receiving it,
okay.
and you replace these with vinyl.
Mm-hmm.
You'll lose it.
Oh.
I mean,
that's done with.
It's over. Okay.
I've been with the company since 1992, so 20 plus years.
Oh,
so
well,
I
yeah.
know that the tax credit is already done.
but hopefully, I mean, I think there's a lot of other options to consider, and I hope that you consider them before, you know.
So tell me what you know, because do you know kind of what cost ranges are on some of these?
The biggest thing that's going to drive the cost is whether you can get a standard window to fit your opening, or whether you have to get a custom sized one.
Okay.
And that's going to drive the cost on any window replacement.
Right.
You know, if it's a $300 window, that's an off the shelf dimensions.
Mm-hmm.
And if it doesn't fit in exactly, they're just going to shim it out, and you're not going to get a very good install. And it's going to look way different after that. So that's the biggest thing that's going to drive it, is whether it's a standard size or it has to be custom sized.
Okay.
You know, I think it really looks good on the Historic Preservation Commission if somebody wants to do a little pro bono consulting. On
well, there'd be no conflict of interest on that, since there's no certificate of interest.
Yeah. So, yeah, and maybe you and I could just have a quick conversation because I do have some more, but I don't want to take up everybody's time.
I'd be happy to.
So let me give you my card. Maybe we can set up the time to chat on the phone or come by, whatever works. And I just want to say, I'm a purist too. I love this building. I've been around a long time. I love this building. In fact, we're getting ready to have a 90th birthday party on March 17th, St. Patty's Day. So anybody wants to come by, I will send Jackie an invitation that you can shoot it out.
So I reconditioned all the windows on a turn of the century twin. And a lot of them were in worse shape than that. So I'm very familiar with what it takes to get it done. It was a big project to do.
I would imagine.
And it seems like windows have a sort of outsized consideration when thinking about a building's integrity and its historic integrity. It seems like windows play a big role.
It plays
like
big
swapping
role.
Out windows is for... For purists, it's sort of like, so, you know, I do think, you know, there's some compromise, though. I mean, I think Sarah's idea of, you know, the more visible ones, if they could be, you know, perhaps rehabbed, and those ones on the upper floors could be swapped out with something with similar dimensions, but not, say, materials that might...
Yeah. What kind of rolls through my head when you say that is, this is Main Street.
Uh-huh. So, I said, looks like a lot of windows in here.
That's a lot of windows. So, you know, and then we have, you know, this is Fifth Street that faces the Highway 14, mm-hmm. I-5. So, there's a lot of eye happening there.
Yeah.
You know, the back of the building, probably a little bit more simpler, but again, a heck of a lot of windows there.
Well, it sounds like we're all more sensitive about the ground floor, right? Mm-hmm. The entry, and so I think that's kind of where we begin with the compromises. Not that you need our approval, but you know, I think to the extent that we can save that and can maintain the sidewalk appeal would kind of be the best.
Yeah, I mean, maybe you could argue that, you know, replacing those metal windows with wood windows would be a form of mitigation for replacing the upper windows with vinyl or
kind of a trade-off,
something like that.
Yeah. Want to look at it? I'm game to look at any.
And Sean, I mean, you could always recuse yourself if you start consulting with them. Recuse yourself from voting. So.
Well, you know, in defense of the purists, I think one of the reasons that windows get so much attention is because in architecture history, windows are such a defining element of architectural style, and you know, all those thicknesses. And so, when you change that, you actually have a fairly big impact on the character of a building, especially its architectural character. I think a lot of purists go a bit too far.
Okay.
Thank you, Jamie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Jamie, I will be leaving the city next month. So, yeah. It's scary. This is Keith Jones. Keith will be taking over. I want to introduce Keith to everybody.
Yeah. Hello, everybody.
Where they all leave their tags.
Yeah.
Keith, have you been here before? You look familiar to me. Before the commission at some point?
No. Okay. I started my career in Vancouver in 98, so I know John from back then. I was an assistant planner. And then most recently, I was in consulting for the last 12 years. I worked for Harper Off Peterson Regalis. It's a local.
Okay.
I think I did a couple projects in campus with you through that. And then, I don't know, I think, Alex, we probably talked
maybe
on the phone. I don't
know
if we met in person, but I think we got some information, predeterminations or something.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, HHPR.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, we live in Camas now, so I moved over to the side of the river and wanted a different lifestyle. And
you know, it's just East Side Vancouver.
That's right, East Side Vancouver.
All right.
Yeah.
Not me saying.
You're ready for the hazing.
Okay. Oh, guys.
We're brutal sometimes.
John deserves to retire.
Yeah, hopefully
you
got
good
stuff
planned. So, what do you have planned? What? I don't have a plan. I really do not have a plan.
Drive cars real fast.
Hard to do that.
Yeah.
Well, they're not real fast, though. Never mind. No, I'm just going to try to find something else to do that I have never tried. I don't know what that is. Let's see if I like it.
Sounds good.
Well, I hate long goodbyes. I'm going to get all choked up.
He said he might come back and
watch. Okay.
Yeah, well, she brings the stuff back.
That's right.
But I don't see that happening between now and then.
You get a push.
Yeah. You'll be in good hands with Keith.
Okay, so we'll be working with Keith, and then, so what do I do from here? Sorry.
Well, I would get with Sean and answer any questions you might have, if you might have some ideas for other options to look at, just to kind of get an idea of what there's out there. And then once you kind of made a decision on maybe what you want to do, you'll get in touch with Keith, and he'll get you do kind of what you did in 2013.
Okay.
And that's it.
And we do have two additional architects on the commission who are not here right now, but they may have some thoughts as well.
So. We'll give you all the conflicting opinions.
No conflicting opinions. Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you, Jamie.
Okay, do you want to kind of stay with new business and finish it out, or do you want to hop back?
Yeah, let's do new business.
You want to do new business first? Well, it's a new year. You can switch it up.
All right, Alex is up.
Oh, you're up.
I don't think they're coming. I'm moving over.
Yeah, it's a little weird.
It's really weird.
Actually, no, I think Mark did tell me a long time ago that he was going to see the
conference.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm dropping that tent right
in the box. All right, Sean.
Alice, just let us know
that you... Okay. Yeah. Okay, well, did you guys read the little thing I wrote?
Yes.
Okay. And John, you had mentioned that SEPA is kicked in when there's a demolition.
Yes.
Under what circumstances? Because I've talked to DAP, and they have never reviewed a demolition permit from Clark County or the City of Vancouver.
It's been a while since we've done one. We did one for a long time ago in the water school. The school from
Brown. Yeah. Our building department wouldn't ever do a SEPA either for just a demo.
Yeah.
We were technically required to do a SEPA for any demolition. The cost of the fifth, which the construction of that building would cost an LCD's SEPA report. What it says is if you take down a building, when it was built now would require a SEPA. It takes a SEPA to tear it down.
So it's the size or the...
Yeah.
Okay, so that takes all single family residences out.
Yeah.
All that are built around here.
There is also, I believe, that you're supposed to consider SEPA if it's over 45 years old.
Nobody does that. And part of the problem is because the demolition permit applications have nowhere to put when the build date of the building is, or a checkbox saying, is it over 50 years old? So I think that, starting with maybe just some fundamental changes to the application, but eventually I'd like to see some sort of regulatory change so that there's at least maybe perhaps a delay in issuing a demolition permit for a structure over 50 years old so it can be recorded. Just even if it's only on the historic property inventory, so that a record of that building exists prior to its demolition. Clark County is the best county in the state in terms of its assessor's website, its GIS, in terms of putting property information up there regarding build dates, modification dates, floor plans, all that stuff. But as soon as a building's demolished, that stuff goes, and there's no record. So, like, if you go to 701 East McLaughlin Street, there was a nice American four-square house there that was torn down in late 2016. There's no record of it anymore on anywhere. I mean, it's like it never existed. And so, my proposal is that we've form a subcommittee or something to look into what might be a good compromise. I mean, I don't want to slow down, or make it prohibitively expensive to get a demolition permit. I mean, there are a lot of buildings that are over 50 years old that, quite frankly, probably should come down. They're either not safe or whatever. But there are also just a lot of cool, old, single-family residences that are just being demolished, and nobody's reviewing them, nobody's taking getting an eye on them. So I've looked around, and I've pulled up, I don't know if we want to go through it right now, but... Bellingham has a pretty rigorous review process. Tucson, Arizona has what looks to me like a fairly easygoing process. They have a lot of historic districts, but the process that I'm looking at is that if it's outside a historic district and it's over 50 years old, they have somebody look at it, and it would either get a sort of like a reconnaissance level documentation, or if a preservation professional thinks it's eligible for listing, it would get an intensive level documentation. So, but I think at least having a waiting period so that it can be documented would be a good first start. And, having it invoke SEPA, I mean, there would be, I think, ways to address it under current regulations without having to change local code. You know, I was telling Jackie earlier today, EO 0505 encourages all municipalities to incorporate consultation into their government decisions. So you could almost, you could justify it under EO, the executive order from 2005. Also, SEPA would be another way to address this, if single family resident. I mean, obviously that there are other environmental concerns like asbestos and oil tanks that go into demolitions that I would think would sort of kick in SEPA. I mean, but it doesn't really seem to. Talking to DAF, they said the only municipality they get demolition reviews from is Bellingham in the state. So anyway, just something to think about. I don't know if anybody feels the same way I do even, but in my line of work, I go out to these predetermination areas, and the savvy developer knows I'll demolish the building before he goes out there, because then because if I go out there and I see an old house and it's over 50 years old and I ask, is it going to be demolished as part of this project? Yeah, well, I'm going to record it, even though the state the county and the city don't have regulations. I just kind of do it on my own. But I'd like to see it get codified in some way so that we can, catch these things. And, even just a check mark right now or something to say, is it over 50 years old? But there's nothing on these permit applications that have anything to do with the building's age. So,
where do you... have you thought about where to keep the information once it's been captured?
Yeah, the historic property inventory with DAP.
Oh, okay.
Which is accessible to everyone on the public side of the wizard. So, you could at least see it. And one of the municipalities, was just, if it's over 50 years old, we want a photo of every face, exterior face of the building, and a rough schematic floor plan.
So it's almost something that almost anybody could do.
I mean, there are various levels. And one of the documents that I pulled up is from the Historic Trust, the National Trust, and it's their review of demolition of historic properties and how to approach them. And they really take from a lot of examples around the country. And that was 2006, I think it was published. So, but it gives a good baseline of what's out there and what different municipalities are doing to address this. And, I just feel like, we're in such a boom right now, and things are developing so fast in the city and in the county and everything else, that there are a lot of houses just getting razed under, and they're gone. So I feel like it's kind of as the Historic Preservation Commission.
It'd be good to know also, try to capture who owned those buildings too, mm-hmm. before it goes.
Yeah.
That's maybe a given, but
Yeah, and you know, and again, it's like, you know, I don't want it to get so onerous that it becomes you know, a real impediment. But I think some level of documentation, and you know, the only reason I say it is because, you know, the ownership thing can be laborious to try to track down.
Well, if it's all, I was thinking in my mind that it's already available on like Clark County's website. You know, there's already you know, a list of owners of the building, and if all that's being wiped away as soon as it's demolished,
mm-hmm.
So it's not really asking them to go into history, you know, do any digging of their own, just capture that before it gets erased.
Yeah, I mean, you know, just walking by the Propstra House on Columbia, you know, it's a pretty, you know, it doesn't look any different from any really of the other houses, and if somebody was going to demolish it, I don't know that it would get caught.
The one that's on the register, or no?
Yeah, it's on the register, but there's nothing in these demolition permits, and if
it's flagged in our permit systems, at least okay. So they come in for a permit.
No, I looked it up. We didn't see it.
We've recently reached out to all the cities because that they're supposed to flag it, and so we've given them all. I mean, the city does theirs, we do ours, and our maps online and GIS. Mm-hmm. So developers' packets have it, and now the smaller cities, we've sent the list. Like, these are the properties. Like, if anything comes up, please let us know.
But so it takes it takes a person to actually. Right, to say, oh, and check it versus against the list. I mean, that.
I don't know how the city, I'm assuming that they have a permit database, they flag these problems. That's what we've asked them to do. I mean, that's how it works. So, like, someone comes into our permit center and requests a permit of any kind, there's a flag, this flag comes up. And so the permit tech's like, okay, I gotta stop here. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of how we've done it.
Okay.
But I can always speak to the county side of that.
I think that you asked if anyone would be interested in helping with this committee, and I'd be interested in helping just because I could see that this is a conversation that has to happen with the cities. How do you flag it? I can tell you from the city of Canvases that we don't have a permit tracking system. There isn't such a thing. We have an Excel spreadsheet. Things come in when they come in. So I don't know what happened. I remember the building official came to my office to let me know that you'd contacted him. He's kind of like, oh, this was nice and interesting. Like, who's interested in it? But who knows what happened to that piece of paper, you know, afterward. So, and I have looked at some properties, just kind of spot checked to see if there would be something that would come up.
They're still there.
We don't. No, there's a few properties I've personally been kind of keeping a watch on and hoping every time they come in for a pre-application meeting, I've been telling them that it's an eligible property. Let me talk to you about how to put it on the registry, you know, that sort of thing. But they're not. So there's nothing that tells anybody else that, other than maybe, you know, a property owner look at this building and go, this looks kind of special compared to the others. You know?
Well, and that's how I felt about that 701 East McLaughlin, you know, because it was right by the freeway, and you know, I'd see it all the time. It's just this nice old American Foursquare, and then. You know, and I saw it was for sale, and I started thinking, oh, I wonder if they're going to demolish it, because it had been abandoned for a few years, and then gone. So,
you know, I think that there's one thing that's available here is the fact that, you know, the demolition permit has to be signed, and so just by having checkboxes on there, I mean, you put some teeth to at least gathering the information,
mm-hmm.
even if it is just, hey, is this listed on the national, state, or local register?
Yeah, you know? Or is it over 50 years?
Is it over 50 years? And if they check something and it's not true, you know, then there's some teeth in that without really changing anything except for putting a checkbox on the form. But I think there are tons of things that could be done just to get, you know, that basic level information and to do it in a way that doesn't have to hold up things when it doesn't need to. Especially if it is just as simple as, you know, if your demolition permit has these pictures and this plan, then it'll be processed normally. And if it doesn't, then it's a 90-day stay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, all of that is really a big thing for any jurisdiction. It sounds really simple
I know.
But you have to go through the rulemaking process. Yeah.
That's why I'd be willing to help, because it would be a matter, I'm imagining, of going and meeting with each city and talking to their building department and then coming back and talking to them again, because they're not going to be convinced of anything the first time. So it's going to be, we have to be persistent and listen, and some of them might add things to the form, some of them won't, but it's, you know, I think whatever, you know, whatever the plan is, it's just that idea that we'll have to have an idea that it will take going to the building departments, it'll probably take going to their city councils. It might not, but some of them might actually want you to
present
yeah. and explain.
Yeah, they tend to be suspicious of bureaucracy.
You know, some smaller jurisdictions might be like, sure, we'll add that to the form. Sure, you know, they might just, you know, but others might need, might want more.
But I think it's a great idea.
Yeah.
I mean, we're better than Bellingham.
Well, I was just kind of surprised that we don't already, given our sort of history-centric way, you know, it's just surprising to me. So.
Well, I just, you know, I think you've identified an issue, and, you know, let's see what we can do.
I'd be interested in participating as well, yeah.
So you've got at least three. It's a little subcommittee.
Yeah.
And we'll help, so whatever you want to do next, Alex, you just kind of lead.
Okay.
Do you want to maybe put a subcommittee together next meeting when everybody's
sure,
here?
Yeah, or we can have some more takers.
Or we could just do it now, or you can give it some more thought about, you know, how to pursue it.
Well, I would assume we could set up a couple meetings or something and just invite the others if they want to join the subcommittee. Then,
yeah, you know, that's true.
Just move forward and...
So you want a subcommittee? All right. We've got two takers, John.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So, the power vested in me, but Clark County Historic Preservation Commission, I declare a subcommittee to look at demolition policy and review.
And it's a new year. You've added flourish.
I know. And it's going to consist of Alex, Sarah, and Sean.
Cool.
And anybody else who gets really enthusiastic about it. I'm enthusiastic about it, but we don't need the whole commission on it.
All
right. Great idea.
Okay, moving on to the last item under new business. This is just a brief overview update from me. The county is looking at public benefit rating systems, which I don't know if anyone's familiar with. Currently, we have our current use program, right? So this is classifications for timberland, forest land, agriculture land, and open space. And under the open space category is where our historic sites incentive lies. So right now, there's some, I guess, fairness issues with the open space program, because no matter what you're doing on it, you get the same benefit overall, and there could be all kinds of different uses that are happening that are getting this benefit. And what a public benefit rating system does, it has the jurisdiction kind of prioritize what they feel is most important and puts kind of a point value on things. So if you have a really sensitive environmental creek that's in your property that you can't build on because it's there, and you're providing that public benefit by protecting it and owning it, then, you know, that there's a point value for this. So I bring this up because I'm on this committee. And so we're just starting to look at what this might look like and whether or not this would work here in Clark County. They're also looking at a lot of people that are in agriculture use, which is a different category, and it's more, I think, state-run, like state codified. If they get to a point and they no longer want to farm and they still want to live there, but they're not continuing the farm use, then they have to get out of the farm classification. And that means they have to pay back taxes on it. And it's becoming an issue for a lot of our older population farmers that they can't do it anymore, but they don't want to move and they want to stay there. So right now, some of them don't have anywhere to transfer into. So this would be another program that they could transfer into a conservation farm conservation, whereas they wouldn't get the biggest benefit that they were getting when they were farming, but they would still have something.
That's an amazing idea, actually. Yeah. I mean,
So it's
protecting
trying to
our
figure
farmland
out
for the future.
Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. So the thing with historic sites, it'll fall under this open space classification. So as of right now, you know, everyone's getting the same benefit overall. This could change the point value, and they, some of our historic sites might not get the whole enchilada, right? First, they might get a different percentage benefit than they do there. So this is just starting, but I wanted to kind of brief you on it so you knew that this is being discussed and this would affect one of our incentive programs potentially. But I'll keep you updated as we go. We've only met once, so it's just at the beginning. One of the questions that came up, because right now National Register properties and Clark County Heritage Register properties both can receive that benefit, but our Clark County Heritage Register requires review and making sure that people come before you and they're making changes, so it's a little bit more restrictive than the National Register. So is there a different percent or point values because of that? Sometimes you get more points if you're on a local register because participate in the review processes and those properties going to be protected more than perhaps maybe a National Register property.
Or do you only qualify if it's on the
or if you own it. So just kind of food for thought now, but if there's anything that comes up that you have any questions about, you know, or comments on that you want me to share with this committee, just send, you know, email me or give me a call and I'm happy to relay those messages.
Is this system all done through tax?
Yeah, the tax assessments.
When is the work supposed to be finished?
They don't really have a set timeline. I think they hope to have something kind of this kind of beginning research done this year. Mm-hmm. And then if there's going to be a proposal to move forward, then there'll be some public outreach and of course hearings and whatnot. So hopefully by next meeting they might have a little bit more firm.
So they're really not even sure if they want to move forward.
Well, I mean, it seems like it's something that everyone is interested in and that will fix some of the issues that we're seeing with the open space classification. So I can see it happening, and it's a lot of jurisdictions in the state are using it, so.
Yeah, is this a county thing or is this a statewide thing?
The open space or the current use is statewide, right?
Okay.
But you can design, I think, your open space classification this way if you chose.
At a local level.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's just, I wanted to keep you all in the loop on that. Okay, so I guess we're gonna circle back.
Yep.
Back in time.
That's 2017.
So the first item under old business update is our budget discussion, and I'm going to pass it over to Sharon here to kind of walk you through the work program and ideas handout that we gave you here. So kind of started our, I think, budget discussion last meeting, just to kind of get you all started to think about things you might want to utilize your outreach funds on. So we're just following up on that.
So we need you to start thinking about your budget priorities for 2019-2020 for the county budget. Remember that City of Vancouver has the $10,000 a year for your budget at the county, so that's planning for this year, but then our budget is on a two-year cycle, so we need to think about 2019 and 2020, so we need to request these funds. We have $10,000 a year from the county, and $2,000 of that we use for the mobile app platform, so we've got about $8,000 a year.
We have to request in
2020. So we've got to go through the requesting cycle. So we've got to do your two budgets, your city budget this year and then your county budget for 2019 and 2020. And we can use the historical promotion grants for non-grant activities like interpretive panels. Both Camas, the center, and Vancouver have requested more of those interpretive panels. And then the city's budget is going for memberships that you've been paying at several museums in the county, outreach, like interpretive panels, administration, like recording of the historic site, nomination certificates that have never been done, and direct preservation, like the work that we did for the center. We hired the consultant to do the nomination. So I guess the first thing is to think about,
did you put together a spreadsheet?
We have a spreadsheet. We just didn't want to get through the weeds of that quite yet. We kind of want to do prioritize, like, do you still want to do these memberships? You know,
so we can bring this next month.
Yeah. Okay.
Once you kind of, like, we have that spreadsheet, we just want to get down there yet. Yeah.
Because you've got about nine.
3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
Seven memberships that add up to about 1,045. So, you know, about 10% of your budget. And those are, you know.
Is that consistently how much we've been spending?
Yeah, okay. For that, yeah.
Do you want to continue to do that?
I have been noticing, have you guys been getting the emails from the Architectural Heritage Center that the membership now allows you to get into all these other museums?
No.
You haven't seen
that? I get those and I glance at them, but.
Well, they have a 2018 thing special, and I haven't gone into it further, but it says something about the membership to the Architectural Heritage Center will also get you into, like, the zoo and get you into some different places around town.
I'm a Zoom member. They give you, like, a kind of calendar, like, every month. You are a member of this organization for the month of March, you can go to the zoo. Mm-hmm. Get into the zoo for March. Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm not sure if it's just for this month, but it seemed like it had a list of other museums that you can get into as well. But honestly, I haven't been to this. Every time I think about it, I want to go. The hours are so weird, and they're not open all day Saturday. Things like that are my excuses. So I feel bad about us even spending money on a membership, even though it's a group membership, for something that I haven't utilized. I don't know what you guys think about that.
Well, it's not much money.
$55 a year. $55.
For all of us?
Oh. Yeah. And there is a research library upstairs that does kind of keep us tied into the greater Portland area. They're very active. And, you know.
I read their newsletters. That's not the extent.
Mm-hmm. I mean, on one hand, it's kind of nice to support, you know, other historic organizations, and
for $55, I think it's
okay. Well, I'm just saying, on the record, I aspire to go to this museum.
Let's form a subcommittee and go.
We almost need to. Yeah. If you make a meeting there, I'll be there.
Next plus commission meeting. Next resource center.
Well, actually, we did get some benefit when we did the tour of the Shire out in the gorge. I reached out to the AHC and they promoted it among their membership. So we got a little bit of value out of that.
So you just kind of feel comfortable kind of continuing on those that we had been doing?
Generally, yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
All right, all right. Good. And then, let's see, the museum lectures. So the Clark County Historic Museum, they presented to you 2 months ago, a request for $2,000 to sponsor the first Thursday speaker series.
And I would like you to participate too, so, which I think is great.
Yeah.
Right, it was a good pitch.
Yes.
Let's come back to that one.
Okay.
Because that's actually, that funding is varied from year to year, right? Some years it's been one, some years it's been two, so it's kind of...
It's kind of their needs and what they're working on, you know, for the...
Their needs and what we have left over, right? So.
And then they've also requested, so we'll send out an email requesting people to sign up for different talks, so like at least one number to be there, make just a short presentation about Star Preservation Commission, a presentation more like you know, what you are, what you're doing, so pass that out.
Yeah, Brad's doing a great job this year really getting some of these lectures out into Clark County at large, so hitting a lot of those buildings that are on our register, so it's a good tie for one of us to be there, you know, just to talk about the program and that this is on the register and a little bit about what you all do.
And then, so that's membership and sponsorship. And then your program outreach, a couple options are, well, the Poor Farm Cemetery panel, which we've already designed, but it hasn't been fabricated and installed, and that's $2,000.
Basically, we need to do that one. So that one was, it was gonna be part of the packet of five that we had done 2016, I wanna say. And we didn't have time to finish that design. And plus, we didn't know where we were going to put it, so we were like, let's just hold off. So So it's kind of a carryover. Its design is ready. We just need to purchase the for it to be fabricated, and then the county will install it wherever appropriate at the cemetery.
And the fence looks really good, by the way. The fence is done?
Yeah, we're
going to. Okay. And then another request was for interpretive panels for downtown Camas, the center, and Vancouver, the historic waterfront park. They've all had requests for interpretive panels.
I'd really like to prioritize the Camas and the center ones. That would really be great to have some out
and
there.
The Vancouver waterfront, they found some artifacts, like an old roller from the pump mill, so they'd like the panels.
So the Camas, like I know Camas came in for a grant, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they said it would be multiple panels, right? So that's kind of a larger chunk. So as a thought to maybe think about either, you know, Camas or Camas and the Center, I think the Center wanted one. And I don't even know, maybe even we can put in the Vancouver one as the proposal for the county's funds for 1920. So we put in our request that we would like to use the $8,000 per year for 1920 for the promotion grant to do interpretive panels with the City of Camas and with La Center, and then see if that gets approved by the county, and then that would be your funding, your project for that fund for those 2 years. So that's just a thought that we wanted to propose.
Yeah, I know Camas came for us for those historic promotion grants, and I think they were just somewhat not fleshed out enough for us to.
Yeah.
They were also a little bit business district rather than historic district.
Right.
Yeah, I think there was some question about where the emphasis was.
Yeah. So if you guys fund it, then you kind of have some feedback from them, and kind of assist with that.
I think generally, since we do have funding, just like with the plaques for buildings, I think interpretive panels, if that's something that we could do kind of on a steady state basis, a little bit more every year, I think that that'd be a great activity for this commission.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't saying that we fund whatever that project exactly was that they brought in, but just to kind of spread the wealth to these other communities was, I mean, to say that.
Well, and, you know, Camas downtown Main Street, that's low-hanging fruit for something like that, because it's got the character already, they're already doing a lot of community outreach. So it's a good place to get those panels in.
Is $2,000 just the installation, or does that also include the research design?
For which part?
The panels. Like, I know we've got a pork farm quote.
That's just for the fabrication.
There's another piece, too, which would be the design.
Well, it's a PM, so you got the dipple. Someone's got to do the research. There's got to be kind of a plan laid out, right?
Okay.
Like, what buildings, where are they going to go, what are we interpreting? And then the research would have to be done for them, the design of the panel itself. And then the fabrication and installation. And it's probably going to be a partnership effort. The city may be okay with installing them. Maybe get some help from our friends at museums for research and things like that. So
We should definitely leverage that the grant to the museum.
And you've got the other museum out, you know, with Two Rivers as well. So, so is that kind of something we?
Yes.
You're interested in?
Yeah.
Okay. So, well, for that one, maybe Sharon and I can put together a kind of proposal specific for those, because that will go to the county's system for their budget process. We'll bring it back in March with maybe some harder numbers and information and have you guys take a look and see what you think. Okay.
And when you say historic waterfront park, are you talking about the new waterfront park? They're calling it historic?
Well,
I was confused by
that. Yeah, an email. So they call it. She did it downtown Vancouver Waterfront Park.
Oh, okay.
They want to have a start panel. I should read a panel.
Okay, because I was thinking it's a new waterfront.
It's new.
Park. Okay.
There's some.
It's not even completely there.
It's not even done yet. They're already calling it historic.
Sorry, part of it. I want to have a panel.
We have a mill in our town, Camas. Let me just say, not just.
It may be history soon, too.
Okay. I'm a little upset about the East Vancouver comments. That's all I got to say.
Okay.
Oh, that was Councilor Bill. Why am I forgetting his last name?
Turley.
Bill Turley called us East Vancouver.
I was like, he's a very sensitive man.
I know. I was like, what was that?
So then 3D on your work plan, I think Robert brought this up, was wanting to have a Hilburn display, possibly at the Historic Museum, with like drawings, you know, drawings and photos. And I met with Brad and we looked at some places that there's two glass cases in their lobby. I don't know if you remember them, but we could use one of those. It could be a 6-month display. It could be curated by WSUV. And it could tie to their talk, which is in October, but it would be 6 months kind of before and after that nice. Talk. And that's about $1,500. Could do something. Curation, the fabrication of the photos.
That's interesting. I was thinking, you know, the lecture, you could just kind of get PowerPoint images or, you know, projection of the blueprints and drawings and such, and then, you know, you just speak to it and speak to the presentation. I wasn't necessarily thinking of something like this, but it's not a bad idea. I don't know if having a, you know, displaying the original, you know, drawings is really adds any value to the presentation over.
Some people give into that. So.
But yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. So that's a rough guess based just kind of on if we fabricated actual full museum style panel to talk about Hilburn's life and fully curated the case, plus us with the unknown of what Robert Schimmelfennig, who would be the most likely the curator's time might be. We don't necessarily know his hourly rate. So just so you know, that may be a high number.
Okay.
And also, we are very excited to display the original in some form if possible, or reproductions if it made more sense, either on the night or in the 6 month. We really want to basically kind of just gauge what the commission's interest is in that. Mm-hmm. And we're looking to utilize those what used to be storefront cases as interpretive cases on a more regular basis, because we feel like it's better use of the space than for maybe consignment photographs and things like that. And actually we're trying to utilize and create smaller gallery spaces for organizations to have more access to more regularly rotating, as opposed to the kind of more 2 to 4 year rotations that we have at the moment. So that's kind of going to be a little bit of background on the discussion that we had. It's very preliminary, and mm-hmm. we, speaking of also the panels, we did the panels for the City of Vancouver, so we have templates that we pull out for exhibits and interpretation that we know all the costs that apply to those. So when we move to the actual implementation portion, we produce a full cost, you know, analysis for you of it, plus a proposal of what each part of that would be in detail, you know, from where the labels would go and how that stuff would work. Just kind of give you further background on that material there.
And then the display case, that would be something that you would create for this exhibit?
It's an in-wall display case that we already have.
It's already there. Okay.
Store merchandise cases. So it's an old...
So you're just kind of refreshing the museum a little bit for this.
And utilizing cases, I think, in a more effective way for more interpretation tying to programs and talks, so that people actually have something to look at an evening when maybe they're talking about David Hilburn, we actually have pieces to look at. Mm-hmm. Trying to create a kind of layered experience for people where they just don't feel like they walked out and heard a bunch of information, but they can actually visually see pieces of that history.
Yeah,
It's a kind it's of new thing.
Well, I'm promoting the lecture. Mm-hmm. To everyone who walks in.
Yeah, but using history. Right?
Interested?
Yeah, we can talk about that more, right?
Yeah.
We're going to get the spreadsheet.
Yeah.
Okay, and the next category is professional education. And we have the DAP training in Tacoma that we did last year. That's not that expensive. It's $25 per person.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I've done before. I think it's the box lunch or something.
Is that coming up again?
I think so. It was in Spokane, I want to say last year, somewhere far.
Yeah.
And so it's back on the west side here, so if there's any interest.
Is there a topic? Do we know if there's a specific?
I haven't gotten anything yet about it. And we haven't really received any details on it at all. We just had heard that it was going to be here around this, you know, instead of the east side, it was going to be on the west side this year.
Okay, next slide. We have Revitalize Washington, which is a 3-day conference in Port Townsend, April 23rd, 25th. And then there's some numbers there. But Robert sent an email talking about how if you're a presenter, then they're waiving the registration.
Yes. So if anybody wants to get in on that and present with me. So, Sarah, I know you're going to be in New Orleans.
Mm-hmm. What are you presenting on?
Didn't you get the email?
Maybe.
So just, have you gone, you were up there one time for Revitalize.
No, I was going to go and then work took me out of town. Yeah,
that's right, Lake Chelan, you were going to
yep.
go. Yeah, so basically I just thought that, you know, many, there's kind of a common theme to a lot of the sessions that they have throughout that event. And kind of discussing what we went through with the Jefferson Davis marker and the whole controversy in the community,
yeah, that's right.
How that tied into historic preservation law, how we kind of, the HPC got involved and how we kind of managed through that and resolved it, and everything was a pretty good story. It's kind of a different type of session from what they normally have at Revitalize Washington. And because it kind of ties into a national controversy right now with all of the southern monuments and how people are reacting to them, it's probably something that, even though we don't have a lot of southern monuments here, the whole idea of how you handle controversial history ties in well to current events.
I think
events.
Just the deep dive into that case study is valuable because mm-hmm. there isn't, at these conferences, there's not a lot of, like, just nuts and bolts of what you do on a commission. So I think that's why people will want to attend it too.
Yeah, I'd be into that.
Okay.
I mean, that whole topic
fascinated me, that
whole episode.
I would have helped you on this. I would have loved to have presented as well.
Okay. So you want to go, and
yeah,
then...
I'd like to go.
Sean, did you mention that you had pitched this to the National Preservation?
Yeah, so I'm interested as well. I pitched the same presentation, essentially, to the NAPC conference in Des Moines. It was accepted.
Okay.
You were accepted?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So this could be a dry run for you.
It could be. It looks like the NAPC conference might be a little bit more of a panel. They want to pull together some other...
Oh, other municipalities mm-hmm. that have dealt with this.
Just looked at the same thing, like Baltimore,
yeah,
was a pretty big example. So it's not clear right now exactly what the format for that one is going to be, but it is that topic.
All right.
Cool.
Congratulations.
Right.
So yeah,
yeah,
she said up to four. It's hard for me to see how having four commissioners present this wouldn't get a little crowded, but I think we could make three work.
Okay.
So that's three registrations.
Cool. Okay.
I could be the guy just, you know, advancing the slide.
the duck click guy
yeah.
is what we used to call him in college.
Yeah.
We'll cost that out because
yeah.
we'll figure out what the other, there's other costs like per diem, hotel. What we can cover.
Yeah, but that definitely offsets it, right? I mean,
it's
almost $500 right there.
Registration.
You know, another thing, I'm just flashing back to Ellensburg a year ago, as I was driving back, and, you know, I was like, well, you know, we could do mileage or we could just reimburse gas receipts too, because my fuel wasn't equal to kind of the mileage reimbursement. And I don't know how everybody feels about that. I mean, yes, it's wear and tear on your vehicle, but the mileage reimbursement is kind of based on IRS rules that
yes.
are kind of about having a viable business vehicle and so forth. So it's not directly applicable to, you know, our own personal situation. So that's another way of doing it without maybe reaching as deeply into the budget.
Well,
if we all agreed on that.
Possible.
Sometimes it's just rules, right?
Yeah.
And you have to
yeah.
stick
carpooling is another way to yeah.
yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And then the NAPC conference is there. Do you know if it's did you get free registration if you're a speaker?
I think there's if I remember right, it's a discounted registration.
Okay,
what?
You should find out for us.
Most of the big conferences anymore, being a speaker doesn't get you free.
Yeah.
I do a lot of conferences and we almost always still
okay.
have to pay to go.
They don't pick you up at the airport in a town car. And
if you're the keynote, maybe.
Keynote, yeah.
I've never been the keynote.
That's early bird is 200 and regular is 250. I don't know if anybody else is thinking
to
go. That
one. So I can. I brought up the email that I got from them to see if they mentioned anything about discounted rate.
So Sean definitely attending.
Yeah.
July 18th.
not interested.
Don't want to get into Des Moines?
Probably years, but they had those subsidies in the past, and then we got that nailed.
And they have the government rates, so that might be another. All right, so for sure, Sean.
And we'll circle back next month, so to bring it up to the rest, to see who else might be interested.
Okay. Then moving on to program administration. These are some wish list things. So recording historic certificates with the auditor for pre-1999 historic sites doesn't cost that much, right? Minimal. If you want to hire a photographer for new photos for the mobile app and the website, it's $100 per site. Some of the photos need to be updated, they're not so good. And the photographer can identify which photos those are on the website, or you can prioritize and say, we've got certain buildings, you could work either way.
That's another one that we could do, kind of the every year, add some more, add some more, add some more.
Mm-hmm. So you'd be interested in that? Do you know how many you'd want to do per year?
I think it'd be nice just to kind of know where we're at, mm-hmm. if you need it. Terrible time to do photos though in the winter time for the properties, but we kind of have an idea of sometimes we don't spend everything that we think we're going to spend every year, so to be able to plug in some of these easy.
That's kind of what those kind of fall into. Yeah.
So you give us a placeholder, a certain number, just have it there, you can use it. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, but she's saying so as we get through the year and we get some of these other maybe bigger projects through, that mm-hmm. we know kind of where we are with the money. And then we can kind of decide how much we have.
Yes. Well, and I think it would also be good to just get a baseline of what, how many need new photos, sure. and okay. I mean, prioritize them. It's these five are terrible. And
yeah, if we do four a year, are we going to be done with it in 2 years or 8 years?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Yeah. 20 years. Mm-hmm.
All right, and then the National Register plaques. We have four public sites that I called and that they would want them. They're $125 a plaque.
So that's kind of an easy one. Just kind of continue what we were doing a couple of years ago and getting the last kind of public buildings.
Yeah, I forgot what they were. Gunnersburg School. Mm-hmm. Ooh, I have a list there. Yeah. I forgot.
Yeah.
I think that's a good one.
That's a good one? Okay. Mm-hmm.
And I think that all of these, if we begin to think about them as a yearly, doing a little bit every year, then if we only get two of something in 1 year, it's not such a big deal because we're going to be doing more next year.
Mm-hmm. That's how the Clark County Heritage Register plaques work. If you get a new we just got the library, they don't have a plaque, so you can plug in the plaque.
So yeah, this is my proposal because right now, since I've been doing this, and John can attest to, they don't come in very often, right? So when we get a local register, staff's like, what do we do? How do we get the plaque? And we're like, how do we pay for this? So this would be putting it all under your all's budget, and it's not that much, but at least whoever comes in after us, it's just a function of mm-hmm. the program versus us being boss, we gotta pay for this. Yeah. And it just, so it just kind of takes away that confusion and it puts it all under one umbrella. And I've checked in with Jan, who she said that would be an acceptable expense for it. So I kind of wanted to propose that as a new addition to the outreach.
Did the properties pay for it?
No, my department's budget would, or John's department budget would, and it would always be us who do we call, what do we do? Now, this would be, it would all be under the city's, this budget, so whoever ran would have those networks, that connection, or who to call to get the invoice, and it would all be more seamless than us trying to reinvent the wheel every time.
So. Sounds reasonable.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right, and then just skipping number six, and so the bucket list was passed, you had last year, it's just things to think about if you want to bring them forward. Incentivizing nominations, funding nominations, providing information on historic preservation specialists for people to hire, a workshop on how to nominate your property, a lecture on nominating properties, economic forecast breakfast. So just ideas, if you want to pull them forward, anything?
I think a community workshop could be a really good one. And if an early one, if it's something that, especially something that might happen again, every year, first one is, hey, how do you nominate a property? But then it could move on to other topics like, hey, how do you recondition your wood windows? And
yeah, I emailed that this morning to her. Let's have one of those workshops. But it was, you know, because of this topic tonight too, I just thought we've had this question, and you know, many times, and it doesn't feel like we ever have resources or, you know, someone they can actually go to. So let's teach people how to fix them themselves.
Or even invite some vendors.
And invite them,
Window vendors light fixture vendors. It's just, hey, we're here, we have these resources, we're in your community.
I mean, not to make it a big thing, but we could do some kind of a fair, you know?
Historical fair.
But it's more of a do-it-yourself sort of theme, though, you know, where, yeah, you could hire someone for this portion, but maybe you could do your, you know, because things like windows or maybe some of these light fixtures or your doorknobs. I mean, I actually learned that at one of the Revitalized Washington conferences, how to like get the right stuff to paint on the metal, you know, like I didn't know how to do that to get all that paint off.
Yeah, so we do this in like this Sweco. It's called Your House Matters, and we have vendors, like you said, like light switchblades and specialists and
You didn't just put it in a crock pot with vinegar and Dawn.
just give us that vendor list and we'll start making phone calls.
Yeah.
And
then.
If we were to do something around funding nominations or at least funding nominations, I think that linking something like that to a most endangered list for the county might be a good thing. It's some way to prioritize, because I don't think we want to just fund any of them. But I think there also needs to be a logical, defensible way for which ones that we are willing to fund if we're going to be funding nominations. Otherwise, it looks like just who had the connections with the commission.
Right, yeah. Because we have other ways people can ask for funding.
So did you want to have a placeholder in the budget or annual workshop? Is that what we jump?
I think at least a placeholder for when we get into the weeds and see if it's something we can fit into the budget. Okay. We've got a lot of stuff right now.
Sarah brought up an email to me today was whether or not this would be a project that you might want to apply for a CLG grant for. I think other jurisdictions have done that. I think some of these trainings that we've maybe gone to have been funded through a CLG grant. And so that I think they do that kind of, that some of their priorities is to raise that awareness and education. So that's a thought.
Well, I was thinking of that because of, your own staff time. If this isn't, something, talking about things like putting together these kind of workshops or trainings, that takes a whole lot of time. And so that would be part of having that CLG grant, would be to actually have someone dedicated to putting that together. And maybe it would then be somewhat of a template for following years, because that person's now kind of, again, put it all together, work off that. You should call the same people.
That helps for sure.
Mm-hmm. A workshop like that, especially if it's more than one topic, and especially if there are vendors there, is also something that a sponsorship model could work really well, where you have local businesses and get your pop-up tent out there and things like that. It's another option.
Yeah. There are window vendors, paint vendors, Habitat for Humanity, because they have salvage stuff. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of vendors that would want to be.
I was looking at their, they keep sending those, they have this fix-it workshop that they asked for. Yeah, Repair Cafe. And I was kind of thinking about that could actually be a good partner for something like this, because you get people that know, like fixing things.
Right.
That, would be there possibly to help.
And they have salvage items too, light fixtures, things that might fit in an older house.
Yeah.
Okay.
The really historic stuff is pretty slim pickings, but if you're looking for things from the 50s and the 70s.
I was thinking more again of, I've taught folks how to weld, and one of the things that happens when people come to a class to learn a new skill is they're all kind of afraid of the equipment, and so to have a lot of people on hand that aren't afraid, even, that's that's why I was saying if you partner with some of these groups, mm-hmm. like maybe that repair cafe group or those people, they might not have the we're asking people to bring their historic items to this workshop, so we wouldn't be expecting, you know, the repair cafe to have it, but to have people on hand that aren't afraid of tools and can help teach people whatever, you know, I mean, this is all just
So the other, and just to plant the seed, because of April's when the grants are going to be due for the CLG grants, so that's, you know, one idea. And then Alex, Sharon, and I have been out to Parkersville Landing. They want us to come out again. So they're a national archaeological site. Slash park. And they have grand plans. I want to do a lot of things. And we came out and I talked to them about maybe thinking about doing a preservation plan to make sure that they, what their plans and what they want to do don't impact the archaeological part of the site. So they're, because at first they were thinking about putting it on the local register and they're not sure, they're on the fence. So Sharon and I will be going back out there Tuesday night to talk to them again about the possibility of either applying for a historical promotion grant if they want to go for this preservation plan or management plan kind of thing, or that there's the other option if they wanted to come talk with you all to have you apply for a CLG grant for it. So that's another thing that's kind of in being talked about, just so you know, so keep that in mind. So
they're on the National Register right now, but they're treating it like a park. And they didn't even know that there are restrictions on the National Register. They've been like excavating this water feature. It's pretty deep. So they didn't even know that they couldn't do that. So they want to move pathways. So they're just treating it like a park. Mm-hmm. And Alex kind of gave them a wake-up call. Like, there are some requirements you have on the National Register. That's what they're figuring out.
Well, actually, the National Register doesn't have the restrictions. It's just state law because it's an archaeological site. But that said, a lot of that park is covered with a lot of fill. And so, you know, the polygon on the state thing is just encompasses the whole park, but in reality there's lots of places where there is no archaeology, you know, or they could go down to a certain depth, but that's never been assessed and really defined. So I think they could benefit from having a comprehensive survey and plan that results from that survey, so that they don't have to go through a review process every time. They know, hey, over here we can dig, and over here we can't dig, and you know. So.
And I think they definitely need kind of that kind of help, because they know what they want to do, and but they weren't quite sure that they could do it wherever they wanted, and so this would help them with that. So
who manages it?
The board.
Oh, okay, that's what I thought.
So there's like this kind of subgroup that manages the park part of it, but they have like one of the park commissioners on that, so there's like that liaison, and so I'm glad that they're talking to us.
And it's had development pressures, like developers wanted to buy that a couple of years ago. Okay. And so they want to protect it so that it can't be developed into townhomes kind of themes. This is beautiful.
So those are kind of two, at least we know now, that we're discussing. So by March, we'll probably have to make a call on that, just so we can get time to do the application.
And no matching grant is required in 2019. That's
There's no match required for this year, for 2019. Okay, so just to recap, memberships are good, right? We're gonna come back to sponsorship. You want to do that now, Robert, or do you
want to
wait until everybody?
Let's wait, because I want to look at that kind of holistically, kind of with sort of the display and everything that we're doing around that.
Okay.
Because, I mean, if you look at that together, that's a fairly significant part of the small budget.
We're good with the cemetery panel, right? Fabrication, getting that done. We're going to pull together some more information proposal-wise for the county part funding for the interpretive panels, so we'll bring that back. A little bit more information maybe on the Hillboard stuff, so that you have something more in writing maybe. And then looks like we've got some folks going to Revitalize Washington. Sean was going to NAPC. And then kind of those other admin stuff, we'll see how things kind of flesh out as we get a couple months into the year.
Good. I'll be gone in April.
Okay. Cool.
Maybe we can think about a budget to order pizza when we have these really late meetings.
There you go. A line item.
A bucket okay. full of Monster Energy yes. drink.
All right. Well, you know, I'm not fighting about my time. I try to like be optimistic with my timing on the agenda.
So, by the way, this is good.
Okay,
it kind of kept us out of the weeds of kind of getting into that spreadsheet. So
next week,
you know
next
us
month.
Well. You're managing that.
So next month we'll get in the weeds then, right?
Mm-hmm. A little bit. Okay. Be careful.
All right.
Okay. So after that, I know we're good. We want to get
if
out
If you don't
here,
give
so.
Me a spreadsheet, I'll make one.
I told you, I was like, I know Sarah might want you, so we might have like a little sidebar.
I need to see them.
We yeah. form a subcommittee?
Yeah, yeah. A little Excel spreadsheet. So yeah. Okay, so update on, so this year we were awarded the CLG grant for a preservation plan for the Heritage Farm. So it's mostly a historic structures report with a little bit of analysis on the landscape because the county is interested in doing a interpretive trail there. So I wanted to look at that as well as we have the cemetery. So we are almost done with the kind of contract for a consultant to do it. We've been back and forth trying to get everything we want to get in the budget that we had. So I think we're there. So it's going to be an assessment of all the structures. And utilizing a lot of the information that we've already done on the significance of the buildings and the features, because we have the survey, the intensive level documentation at the National Register, so we kind of try to get them away from using time to kind of look at that and do that analysis, just take it from that, those plans, focus on the assessments and cost estimation, and so we'll have some projects prioritized and how much would that range would be and what they think is most important, and working with the groups and the community on what the future vision of what could be in those buildings, what would work best, and if that use was in there, what does need to happen to the building to get it back up, you know, to safety and all that. So that's still draft, so we'll hopefully have signatures and it'll be finalized soon. The first meeting where I'm gonna have the consultants come is, so there's a Heritage Farm Team Advisory Board, right? So they are the Heritage Farm Advisory Board plus kind of the WSU that works out there, county staff, master gardeners, the food bank, all the organizations that work out there, as well as community members attend. So I've scheduled April 26th as the first time the consultants are going to come out there with kind of their initial look at it, and then hear from those groups on ideas and brainstorming. And that's what I'm hoping, that you all can come to that meeting. I had to, because of the budget, I had them coming to like a couple of your meetings and it was blowing my budget out. So I was hoping that we could consolidate and maybe have you all come to that so we could all do it together. And then of course at our meetings, I'll be giving you updates.
April 26th.
We'll all be coming back from the Port Townsend Revitalize Washington on the 25th with our
that's true.
Our so, Port Townsend tans.
And there'll be two of those. So there'll be the first one where it's kind of your information gathering. And then the last one will be, okay, this is what we heard from you all. This is what our analysis shows. This is what we put together. And that would be, I think that's in August too. So.
Do we need to make any decisions on that? Okay.
Because it's just a plan, so it's, you know, it's what they want your feedback on it and any insight you want to provide. But it's really, you know, looking at those structures and seeing what needs to be done.
Including that dismantled silo.
Yeah.
Cool.
And so that's all I have for that. I'll pass it off to Alice to give you an update on the cemetery.
Yeah. So there's a new fence. The old fence is gone, and there's a new split rail fence. And I got to say, it looks pretty good. Those guys did a pretty smooth job. Sharon, do you want to just pull up that cemetery, the report? We don't have to go into any of the writing part of it, but I just thought I'd show you guys some photos from it. If you just go to the, just go down until you see the photos. Okay, so this right here, just to give you a sense of it. So
this, I just took some waypoints. So these are the four corners of the new fence. This is the old fence that bisected the cemetery that was removed. The first day, there was a foundation that was called in from a neighbor. Next to the foundation down here, it's a cement foundation. There's also a little brick feature that was right next to it. Mike Jewell, do you know Mike Jewell? He came out and said that his father told him it was a dynamite storage building. And then we found a grave marker in that spot, which I have pictures of. And then the yellow triangle was a fence picket that we found in one of the post holes that came out, which was kind of nice because it kind of ties things together and makes us think that the fence is actually following the old fence line, so the original.
So I didn't know there was a fence out there.
Well,
so
there's the foundation. There's a little opening, 30-inch opening in the bottom photo that you can see where the scale is, and that is the little brick feature, I'm calling it, don't know. That's the grave marker down below. So, you know, one of the defining characteristics of the cemetery is that it never had headstones or anything like that. They were fairly temporary, metal, cheap markers. So you can see it has a place to put a label that would slide in or go into the front. And then if you go down, next photo is the back side of it, and it has a patent date of August 27th, either 1911 or 1915. It's very hard to read. The first internments were 1913, so it is right. The era is correct either way. It's out there still, and I have approached DAP and Brad about turning it over to the Clark County Historic, because there are no more of these. Like, they're all gone. The GPR work indicated that there may be some still buried out there, but the fact that this one came up and it's intact is pretty unusual. So we've got it stashed away, but it won't stay stashed away forever. You know, it will disappear. It will walk off eventually.
Okay.
What can we do
to help that out?
Well, Brad is talking to his collections person about whether they want it. DAP has given the okay for it. I think I should take this through the Burke also, because we had a permit, and it was never intended that we would curate anything unless interested parties requested. You know, so what I was thinking it was, you know, if we find prehistoric artifacts, we find Native American artifacts, and the tribes come in and say, no, we want you to collect it and curate it, then things would go to the Burke. So I have a curation agreement with the Burke, with the understanding they're not expecting anything. So I would just want to run it by them just to say, hey, you know, we've got this very unique local thing here, and we'd like to turn it over to the local museum. And I think they'd be fine. I think Jack.
That I should do in the meantime. I can do.
Do you want to hold on to
sure,
it?
Sure. Yeah.
Oh, that's what you. That's okay. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Yeah.
So I can go retrieve it.
Yes, please.
Okay.
I'll take it.
Okay. Okay. And it didn't stop work. I mean, we stopped work and we consulted with DAP, and DAP essentially said, well, this is the kind of thing we would expect to find at a cemetery. Continue, you know? So it belongs there, kind of thing. And then this is the fence picket that was found in the second post hole south of the northeast corner. And then if you keep going, Sharon, this is the fence finish taken from the southern, from the middle of the southern boundary looking north. So you can see the old fence line there in the dirt.
It's really nice in the landscape, too. It's nice.
Yeah. So this is the site forum. And again, we'll just go to the photo, to the images. Some of them are repeats, but there are a couple. This is sort of the layout of the foundation. If you go back up to that. No, that drawing one.
Over down.
Down this. So this was the foundation, and then there was a post hole dug on either side of the foundation, and that one on the south side was the one where the grave marker was found. And these are just the dimensions that we drew in the field. And then these are the bricks that make up this smaller feature, which was located 18 inches north of the brick of the concrete foundation, and there are these hollow bricks. Fairly good size hollow bricks.
Any idea what either of those features are?
Well, the dynamite storage, supposedly, and I don't know what the smaller brick feature. There's just one course of bricks, and we didn't want to take a shovel to it and start digging them down. So it's intact, and we left it alone, recorded it. And so the cemetery's never had a site form. It's weird, it's got a Smithsonian trinomial. It was recorded on a cemetery form,
yeah.
But just bare bones, very little information. And then, of course, there's the nomination, which has a pretty good discussion of the cemetery, but it's never been recorded as an archaeological site. And so I talked to DAP, and they said, yeah, we'd like it recorded as an archaeological site. You know, it's a contributing element for the whole historic district. So anyway, that's why. I've got
so
a
there's
site.
Two entrances. One is at the south side, and the other is straight at the north end.
Yeah.
And there's no indicator that that's a cemetery.
The neighbors are doing a good job.
So we need to get that panel up.
Yeah.
Well, there's two parts, right? We had the panel, and then we had something that we wanted to say.
Well, and then there's the boulder. I mean, the boulder is still there. It's missing one of its plaques, but it still has.
It doesn't talk about being a cemetery. It talks about pioneers. I don't know that
it says there's 200 burials. It says there are 200 people, 200 individuals or something, whatever it says. I've got it written down somewhere. But the plaque that said in life forsaken, in death forgotten, that one has gone away. I don't know where it is.
Can I make a quick comment?
Yeah.
I do want to just add, I mean, the fence is very nice. It is the most cleared portion, the cemetery, because, of course, neighbors always mowed there. And so it has attracted numerous people. And we were fairly active on Saturday because we did have this. There was a decision, and I'm not sure, maybe Jackie, you can say why, but apparently there is an opening still that hasn't been closed off yet at 68. So we did have motorized vehicles up there, which oddly we have never ever seen, but we had such an entourage of people on Saturday especially. I thought I saw Mark Bull walking actually, because there was a man with socks and odd shoes, and I thought, I didn't want to embarrass him with those socks like that, but we had a lot of dogs. And so we did stop when people went in because they were very attracted to the nice flat ground. And we said, you know, are you aware this is a cemetery? There was one gentleman that got fairly upset, and he said, well, who told us, you know, and who are you? And I said, well, I'm a neighbor. And, you know, and then I made the mistake of saying, well, we put this fence in. He said, what do you mean, we? And I said, well, taxpayers and citizens of Clark County, so don't be offended if somebody says this woman said we. Mm-hmm. But, He was just very, very offended. He had dogs and balls, and he was, you know, going and things. And he said, you know, just want you to know, and, you know, you make the decision. But we had a lot of people, and then people were complaining because it was so rough on the other parts. So there were a lot of people that had walked around, and then there's a clearing up through the woods now that people can walk down and around. And so, you know, there were quite a few, and then others just weren't sure what was going on. So it'll be nice to have some sort of signage, but it did bring to mind that the county may want to consider some sort of appropriate behavior or, you know, something that way, because we saw a lot of things on Saturday. Not Sunday. I don't know if it was because of the Super Bowl or because we, you know, we were greeting people. I'll let them know that there was. But it's a beautiful job. Thank you.
Very good. Okay, so that's good.
Yeah.
Thank you, Alice.
It was kind of pretty interesting.
And we kind of already talked about the Revitalized Washington session. Robert, was there anything else you wanted to add to that at all?
No.
Okay. All right, so we're good. And then Sharon's got an update. Last time we met, we talked about the recordings, the tape recordings of our meetings, right? And Sean, having asked questions like, well, what are we going to do? What are we going to do with all those old tapes that we can't play? So, go ahead.
So, what department is this?
Secretary of State.
Secretary of State has a grant application for digital imaging. So he requested $2,000 to digitize, it's from 2002 to 2015. All the Historic Preservation Commission meetings are on tape sets that we don't even have the equipment to hear. So for like Jefferson Davis, we had to send that out. So he was very positive that that's exactly the kind of thing that they want to digitize. So we might be able to get that all done.
Yep.
And nice. Cool. One day.
So that's there's that.
So what's it on prior to 2002?
We don't have tapes.
They must be already in the archive. I don't know if they were recording back then.
So we just have a box of cassette tapes.
Okay.
100 of them.
Wax cylinders.
Yeah. So we're still not in March, but they're going to take care of that. Let's get that done with the grant.
Yes. The next thing, you'll see I gave you a brief kind of overview of some of the things we're going to be looking at for the code update. Okay, so these are just, maybe next month I'll see what the agenda looks like, but I'm working on revising the code. So the plan is to get that back up to snuff so that it works correctly and we update. There's kind of some things we have to do, like it's no longer the Board of County Councilors, it's the County Council. They recently did that. I'm looking at, DAP has a model code that they have on their website, and I'm looking at our code and that model code to see what's different and if there can be an improvement there. I'm looking at other CLGs that are like us, because some CLGs give recommendations to councils, whereas you all make the decisions, so there's some differences there, so I kind of have to look in at those that are like us. We have right now the National Register nominations that go to the state. We have in the code that we have a public hearing to give a recommendation, and I don't see any other jurisdiction that does that. And sometimes DAP has got a quick timeline and they give it to us and they need it back, like, so the timelines don't fit. So that's something to consider. Try to clarify the nomination procedures. Since our kind of previous reviews, you know, adding language regarding listing of an entire parcel versus maybe just the footprint, depending on, like, we had the Zenner House, which was just the footprint of the building because it was moved. So kind of putting that in there, clarifying the removal from registers and how to amend nominations, kind of utilizing the same process, but saying that so it's clear, clarifying what you do when you get it designated. Right now, the county code has no language about historic districts, which is probably because they didn't foresee there was somewhere in the county that is. But we're pretty urbanized, and we have 50 years, right? It keeps going. So, and even the farm is a district, and we couldn't really nominate it locally as a district because we didn't have language for it. So, putting some language in for that. Clarifying that review process for certificate of appropriateness review instead of a type 3 and a type 1, like what happened to the 2, you're fixing that. The appeal procedure, right now it's unclear, it's kind of tucked into a weird place, so pulling that out so that it's clear that there's an appeal process for all reviews that you do and how you do that. References to, right now we reference other parts of county code that aren't, it just makes it complicated. I want everything in one place. And then...
So you're just adding language, basically, yes, repeating yes, the language yeah, that's in other parts of code.
Yeah, so like we point to like different ways we do our public notice or things like that, and they'll change that code and then forget to fix, you know. So, and we only kind of pick certain things because we don't maybe do the full-blown thing because it's not the same type of review. So I just want to say, this is what you do for a public hearing instead of having to go somewhere else. And then looking at it in the light of, should this, some of it maybe not, should be in code. It's not necessary. It should be in the rules of procedure and vice versa. So that's kind of my initial overview of how I'm looking at it. So the next step would be to bring it forward to you all for like going through it all and then moving it through the county process.
Can you sneak the demolition thing in here too?
We can talk about that. So just want to keep you in the loop. I wanted to do this first and then go to the rules and procedures because I think the code needs to kind of be set before we know what we need to include in the rules. So I know if there's anything else that you all have thought of that's not on this list, let me know. It might come up when we go through it.
Jackie, if you want, I do a lot of code writing.
Okay, cool.
So if you want me to take a look before you bring it to the commission,
that'd be great.
And that'll streamline our process. I just submitted 8 code proposals for Oregon, so.
Okay, good. I would love that. Thank you, Sean. The last thing is tomorrow, I think, we'll be going out. I touched base with Sean and Rob. The year that they were appointed, we added two more members. So we had to stagger them weird. So Sean and Rob have a 2-year term. So theirs is coming up. So it will be, there'll be a news release that goes out announcing those seats. So they'll have to go through the process of reapplying, just as you all have done in the past. So I just wanted to give you a heads up on that. Probably utilize the same cumbersome process that we have.
I get my interview now.
You might get like 3.
Well, I was going to ask, are we putting this in the kind of schedule? Because this isn't that far away. As far as, do we need another committee for our...
For the review process?
Sure.
Are we going to do that again?
Yeah.
Because I couldn't be on that committee, could I?
And we're starting it a little bit earlier because the city wanted enough time to do their interviews, and the county wanted enough time to do their interviews. So we pushed like this whole process up a month.
Didn't you say like March?
Yeah.
So next month.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and I think that's a good idea. I think that we should make an internal recommendation.
Okay.
And maybe, I think last time we were kind of just sort of very, very high level, like, you know, here's the people that we looked at, kind of make up your own mind, and maybe it's probably better for us to kind of do a little more diligent.
Yeah.
So appoint the subcommittee next.
Do you want to appoint it next week, next time?
Because you'll have another 2 weeks.
Right, and we'll have the others that aren't here, and they can help. They can volunteer for something. Well, actually,
yeah, so
Mark and Rob.
Two others.
Subcommittee for what?
To nominate or to review, give recommendations,
whoever applies.
I see.
Yeah. Which, if you want to be part of that process, so, you know, it's
because the interviews would be set the 3rd week of March, didn't
we? I think the deadline's going to be, it's usually 4 or 5 weeks for the application period, so if it's going out tomorrow, then it's going to be probably a week after your next meeting would be the deadline on the applications.
Okay.
We are good.
So we'll just subcommittee at the next meeting?
Yeah,
okay.
I think that'll be fine.
Okay.
And we'll just try to schedule, we'll try to get together and maybe schedule something when we're all together so that everyone has their calendars and can do it. Okay.
I move that we adjourn this meeting.
Wait, whoa.
Oh yeah.
We got to talk about public comment. Lisa?
I said mostly what I want to say, but
say
I'm
piece.
Very excited about that you're looking at maybe eventful opportunities to promote or educate about what you're doing. And I know, Robert, maybe a while back, you and I have spoken about some possibility around the cemetery, some cultural aspects that would be appropriate, that would help with some outreach. It's a good subject matter because it intrigues people. And so, you know, nothing against windows, but I think, you know, cemeteries can create some interest. And I think given that there are some opportunities that the pork farm would like to develop some sustainable funding opportunities, that the ideas have great merit, and I just want to applaud that and encourage, you know, the continuation of that discussion. In fact, I'm hoping that Jackie and I will get together, because I briefly mentioned at the last farm meeting about doing some research, mm-hmm. maybe if you would point my nose in the right direction, and I would still be willing to do that.
Great.
Thank you for your work.
Thanks.
Research on what? Sorry.
And I'm going to
similar sites like
that. And back up just a bit here because Alex, you cut me off.
Sorry.
I was done on the appointment process. I just want to say Sean and Rob, who's not here, both, I think you've been very good members of this commission, so I would encourage you to kind of reapply. I know it's hard to deal with this sometimes, but I hope that you will do so, especially if you're going to be our star representative at the National Innovation Conference. And then one last comment. This wouldn't apply to you now, but John, I want to see you in the future for a public comment, okay? Because I know you've been holding back all these years. I want the unvarnished truth. I want to know what you're really thinking over there. Don't leave me guessing. Okay, so we'll look forward to your public testimony at some point in the future. And with that, if there's no more public comment, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
No.
So moved.
I have a motion.
I seconded it.
It's been seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. It's unanimous. Meeting adjourned.